Hello and welcome to Transmission. Today, Q is joined by Rasmus Rode, who is the CEO of Hybrid Green Tech, provider of virtual power plant solutions, optimizing energy storage and flexibility assets. In this conversation, they discuss how Hybrid Green Tech is the missing link for 100% renewable energy, the complexities of multi-market optimization, and the regulatory hurdles slowing down progress across Europe. As always, if you're enjoying Transmission, please hit subscribe. And if you want more content like this, sign up to Modo Energy's newsletter, The Weekly Dispatch, for the latest in global energy transition. Let's jump in.
Hello, Rasmus. Good to see you again, and welcome to the Transmission podcast.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So let's kick off then, Rasmus. Tell me about the business. So Hybrid Green Tech, you guys have been around for a few years, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners would have seen some of the content that you put out there. So tell us all about the business.
So Hybrid Green Tech, we believe we are the missing link for 100% renewable energy. We are developing a leading fully automated virtual power plant for energy storage and flexibility, for providing next level revenue and asset optimization. We are a full balanced responsible party and retailer with a fully vertical integrated virtual power plant. We have trading system, a multi-market optimizer, asset interfaces, analytical platform and financial system in one single platform, which is the core part of our business. And then we have supporting feeder businesses where we support our customers in getting battery energy storage assets faster to market.
And so could you just give us some of the stats about the company? When did you start? Who was involved? Do you have a co-founder? And how many people are in the business? Which regions do you operate in? How many assets do you control? Let's have it all in one.
Yes, so Hybrid Green Tech was founded by me in 2018. The big challenge I saw at that time, that was that I worked for many years within both energy storage and hydrogen. I have a PhD within electrochemistry and designed base system for 4 years in a battery management system provider. Where I was responsible for developing full base systems. But the challenge I saw at that time, that was it was extremely hard to convince customers that there was a business case for batteries. But I could see from, among others, the Bloomberg New Energy Finance forecast, that from 18 to 2040, base systems and base deployment will increase by a factor 1100. So I thought at one point, where prices go down, there will be very good business case for battery systems. And already, I think, at least in Denmark, then in 2023, we was down and having payback times around one and a half years. So the business cases finally came. I was founded it in 2018. I was a one-man army for the first 1.5 years. Until I raised the capital to hire the first employees. Today we are 30 employees in Hybrid Green Tech. We are market active in Denmark, controlling portfolios in both DK1 and DK2. It's a bit weird, such a small country have two different synchronization areas. That's very unusual. And that is for our virtual power plant. For our business analytics, we are doing business case analysis all over Europe.
And so what kind of assets do you control in the virtual power plant? Of course, batteries, but what else?
Battery energy storage systems is our core. Then we are aggregating more than 100,000 EV charge points through charge point operators and charge point management systems. Then we have are aggregating heat pumps, domestic heat pumps. That is also through heat pump service providers. And then we are aggregating a number of load banks as well. So that is the typical asset types we have We have developed an optimizer and energy management system integrated in it, so we can both optimize BESS standalone. We can also optimize BESS co-located with PV. And then we are also optimizing BESS systems behind the meter for C&I customers, where we both have production forecasting, but also load forecasting and managing the integrity there is behind the meter. This is where I think BESS optimizations is becoming real complicated.
And so let me ask you some questions about the Danish grid then, while I've got you on, which is, of course, your home market. You mentioned a moment ago that there's a couple of synchronized grids in Denmark. Can you talk a little bit about that? That's a fascinating fact.
Yes, we have DK1 and DK2. We are actually planning on getting DK3 as well. But at the moment, we have DK1 and DK2. And DK1 is Jutland and Funen. The DK1 and DK2 is isolated at the Great Belt. So that is the area between Zealand and Funen. And Funen and Jutland is synchronous with the German grid. This means that it's the German Central European requirements and ancillary service markets available in DK1. And DK2 is connected to the Nordic synchronous areas. So that is that frequency is synchronized with Sweden, Norway and Finland. And this therefore is the ancillary service markets available is quite different compared to DK1. And the reason for that is that you need a lot more ancillary service markets in the Nordics because you have significantly fewer consumers than you have in the rest of Europe. Therefore, you need more ancillary services in order to stabilize the frequency. So you, instead of one primary reserve in DK1, which is FCR, you have fast frequency response in DK2. You have FCRD, frequency containment reserve disturbance, both up and down. And then you have frequency containment reserve normal reserve, FCRN. Yeah, there's four different primary reserve. And then you have two secondary reserve, but that you both have in DK1 and DK2. And they were, AFRR was made asymmetrical in October last year. So you have AFRR automatic frequency restoration reserve, both up and down, that we made in Denmark in October last year. And that's quite interesting and bit quite profitable, base revenue for more than half a year now. And a fun fact there is that there are, you get a capacity payment in AFR, but you also get an energy activation payment. But it's only DK2, Zealand and Ireland that are getting energy activation payment in the Nordics, which means that the revenue in DK2 for AFR is significantly more profitable than that it is in Sweden.
Interesting. And what's the Danish market shaking out like then? So for batteries, for some markets, it becomes clear that there's going to be an optimizer play that will dominate.
Yeah.
In other markets around the world, you see utilities taking a more active approach, or you get kind of vertically integrated IPPs that do the whole thing. So what's Denmark looking like? What's the direction of travel? Do asset owners generally want to use an optimizer? And what does the optimization market look like? Of course, you're right in the middle of it. So how do you think about that?
Yeah, there is... There are the, the large BRPs, energy traders, that are providing some of the services. And then there are a few optimizers like us, like Hybrid GreenTech. And then we see some vertical integrated energy companies that some of them are developing their own platform. But I don't know how, but for many of them, that has been challenging to develop. So some of them is also coming and knocking on our door to get support.
And when you think about controlling battery assets, do you put hardware on the site or do you do it all via API?
It's actually quite interesting questions, because we wanted from the beginning of Hybrid Green Tech, we want to be technology agnostic. We want to be able to integrate with any business system available on the market. And we want to have limited hardware outside as possible. So this means that we only have an industrial graded router to give us internet access. And that's it. And that enables, it could be Modbus communication or IEC 104 communication from the BIS to our cloud. And that actually the only hardware we have on site. But what it enables us together with our software and our cloud platform, we are actually enabling from we measure a grid disturbance, a grid frequency disturbance, till we get the data in our cloud to our customers' assets response is within 135 milliseconds, which means that we are more than 5 times faster than the fastest market we have in DK2, which is called FFR, fast frequency response, which requires 700 milliseconds response time. So even though we have very limited hardware on site, we still enable very fast responses. Furthermore, we want to have our energy management and control based in the cloud. We have done that with great success, but we are also enabled, if customer wants it, we are also enabled to do delegated control where part of the control happens at site.
That's an interesting approach. So 10 years ago or so, when I first got involved in building battery assets, and they were much smaller back then, of course, it was quite often for sites to have a problem where, you know, you build the battery and then somewhere towards the commissioning, you know, commissioning is approaching and then someone says, right, we need an internet connection. And you can wait months and months for internet connections. But now I wonder whether, and then 4G came along and then 5G came along and you could have some backup or some dual internet connections. But I wonder whether anyone's using Starlink. Are you looking at using Starlink on sites? Actually, if you're listening to this and you're listening to this podcast and you've got a battery asset that's using Starlink, we'd love to hear from you. And I wonder how that's going to change the market when you have this super low latency internet everywhere approach with like incredible uptime. And I wonder whether you can start moving EMSs to the cloud like you're talking about, exactly as you're saying.
Yeah. We have moved the EMS to the cloud. We are not using Starlink, but it can be a possibility. The router we are using, designed in built in Europe, that is enable us to do fiber, 4G and 5G in one router. So there is always internet fallback. If the fiber connection is lost or the 5G is lost, then it roll down to the next one. So there's three different connections in one router, which enable us to if we lose one of the connections, then we still have a fallback connection.
And what kind of battery assets are folks building and developing in Denmark? You know, do they tend to be kind of 1 hour system, 2 hour systems? Are they longer duration? What kind of scale is this market starting to get to?
In the beginning, it was primarily 1 hour system. And there was standalone BIS systems designed only to capture revenue in ancillary service markets. But as we have seen that the secondary reserves is getting more profitable, and also that spreads are getting bigger, then actually 2 hour and 4 hour system is becoming increasingly interesting. And these are the two types of systems that we see most customers design today. Typical asset sizes have for the last few years been 2-5 megawatt hours or 2-5 megawatts and 1 to 2 hour systems, but actually now we see 30 megawatt hour, 20 megawatt hour, 80 and even several hundred megawatt hour systems planned for deployment.
So let's switch lanes a second and talk about degradation, because I know that you and the team spend a lot of time thinking about degradation, and it's one of the things you mention as part of your sales pitch. So take a step back. Battery degradation is, of course, a core challenge for battery assets and in energy storage in general. So how do you at Hybrid Greentech think about degradation? And can you just talk about how you build that into your models? Because I know it's something that you spend a lot of time working on.
Yeah. So as I told also from my background that I have a PhD in battery and PhD in degradation and performance of electrochemical cells, both hydrogen cells and battery cells. And I worked with battery management systems for 4 years doing a business design. So Hybrid Greentech is founded on very deep domain knowledge on best degradation and performance. And therefore, as a part of our services and operational services with our virtual power plant, we also deliver an asset integrity management service for our customers and for the assets we have under management. This means that we can do automated remote state of health monitoring and testing. And we are able to limit cycle degradation when we are planning and trading and operating the best systems. And that is becoming increasingly challenging because you need to know how are you affecting your degradation in the trades you're doing compared to what are the effects on longer term degradation. Like you typically have, depending on the supplier, you usually have 8 to 10,000 full cycles in a BESS system. But there is a big difference if it's microcycles degradation or it's a longer, deeper cycles. So you need to be aware how you affect the battery. And the best way, because the challenge is that you do a lot of microcycles when you do ancillary services, and you do a lot of deep cycles when you're doing arbitrage. So the best way, as we see it, to monitor degradation is to do periodical state of health test to monitor what have been the capacity loss over time. So we do an initial test when we start operating the BESS assets, and then we do periodical test afterwards to continuously monitor the state of health of the assets we have under management.
Can we talk about market access for a moment? So as an optimizer in Denmark, do you have direct market access? And what does that look like? And then how do you think about your business? Because I know you're expanding beyond Denmark, right? Yeah. So how do you think about all of the complications of building an optimization business and then having to get market access in all these different markets, which are all quite different? There's obviously some coverage in, you know, European power exchanges and things, but it's a bit of a challenge. And I'm interested to know how you're going to go about that challenge.
Yes, very, very interesting. We are, as I said earlier, we are a fully vertically integrated optimizer and BRP. We have direct market access to ancillary service markets. We are trading day ahead and intraday. That is done through European Power Exchange. It is the same access more or less all over Europe. It also the same as DK1 requirements. It's more or less the same as Central Europe. It's the same ancillary service markets, and the requirements for the markets are the same. And as well as for DK2, it is the same markets we have in DK2 as we have in Norway, Sweden, and Finland. So by having designed our market access and our platform to DK1 and DK2, we are able to scale to other European countries with only fewer changes to the platform. We have made the platform modular, so we can have a country module for every country. The biggest challenge I see for providing our own market access in every European country, that is integrating the retailer service. So how you are getting meter data, because that is quite different from country to country. In Denmark, we have a central data hub managed by the TSO that are getting all meter data from all energy meters in Denmark. But in other countries, that is specifically to every single DSO. So every single DSO has its own integration and own data access. And in some countries, that is also manual. So there it becomes increasingly challenging to do settlement of these customers if you are also trading energy for them and trading energy for the assets. If you're only doing ancillary services, then it's much easier, but this is not where you can, in the long term, get the highest revenue.
So where are you going next then, Rasmus? What's on the roadmap?
We are pre-approved for some of the Nordic countries, but we're also looking south of Denmark to countries in both east and western part of Europe. We see a huge move towards energy storage in the eastern part of Europe and also Balticum, and getting several customer requests there. Having Balticum disconnected from Russia with only a few grid connections to Central Europe, there is a huge demand for balancing in Balticum as we see it.
So then from your vantage point, your customers span lots of markets. What do you see across the different markets? So what are you learning about how the different markets operate? And ultimately, from an optimization perspective, who's getting it right?
Challenges. I think there will not be one optimizer that takes it all. The ones who getting it right is that, at least what I believe is that you have a huge benefit on being vertically integrated optimizer. Your chain of commands, if you need really fast response time, but also need a stable trading platform and operations platform, it is not stronger than your weakest link. And you need to have your asset state of charge in control at one hand, and you have the market signals in the other hand. And if you introduce multiple API layers from multiple legal entities, so market access with different market actors, then you introduce operational risk and inefficiencies, also higher causes of breakdown of that chain. Through our live operation experience, we have sometimes seen that the actual weakest link is the connection to the TSO, sometimes. So we need to implement data safety and data procedures for the data streams to avoid if sometimes the API suddenly stops or periodically drops out, we need to handle that with minimal impact on the assets we have under management.
Okay, so thinking really big picture here on the macro about integrating energy storage into grids in general, we'll just focus on Europe now. What do you think about getting that done? So there's interconnection queue issues. We've got telemetry challenges. There's obviously all the capital that needs to move in. But when you think about connecting energy storage to grids, how do you think about that problem?
Solving the green transition is super complicated. And with our platform, you need multi-market optimization. You have 15 gate closures spread over 48 hours before delivery hour, while you need to do live state of charge management with live market signals, and you need to have your platform operating with a response time of around 100 milliseconds. That is super complicated. But still, the key challenge for integrating energy storage is paperwork and the waiting time between the paperwork. That is site lease agreement. You need grid connection agreements with sometimes waiting times of 1 to 3 years waiting time. You need building permits, usually 6 months, but sometimes 2 years waiting time to get a building permit. You need land zone permit, usually 6 months waiting time there. Then you need fire approval permit, approximately 3 months waiting time, but you need to educate every single local fire department on battery safety as well. Then you need grid connection approval for technical requirements. And depending on the DSO, you need to educate the DSO on the technical requirements. And usually that also take approximately 1 to 6 months waiting time, depending on their experience. And then you need market pre-qualification for every single ancillary service. And that could take all the way, the fastest we have seen is 1 day. Sometimes it's several months waiting time on that. And that is, as I see it, make both the green transition costly, but also slow its time. So even though we have a virtual power plant company, and that is the core part of our business, then we have been in a need to develop commercial EPC management services for supporting our customers in bringing down waiting times for on approvals and permits in order to get more base volume faster on our platform. Furthermore, we see that grid connection fees are a strong barrier for getting more base into the markets. Therefore, we have seen since October last year an increasing demand for co-located PV and BESS systems, but also an increasing demand for C&I BESS systems, where both of these segments, you are both saving on grid connection fees compared to standalone assets, which means that therefore you will have better business cases compared to standalone business goals.
So lots of paperwork in the way.
And I really hope that we can enable in Europe to bring that down. And even though Denmark is one of the most digital countries, at least what I know in Europe, I'm afraid that in some parts of Europe that will go even slower. I believe that several have the same experience elsewhere. You see support schemes for energies or sub places, but still you have the barriers in paperwork and requirements and how public entities are evaluating these requirements. Because you also have like the technical requirements for grid connection approval. That comes from EU, from the RFG, it's called Requirement for Generators. But every country and every TSO might evaluate these general requirements for generator rules differently. So that's also becoming a challenge.
Okay, so Rasmus, now on to the last two questions. So the first one, this is your opportunity to plug something. So anything you want to get out there to the listeners of the Transmission Podcast, now's your chance.
So we are in very early beginning, as I see it, in developing flexible energy markets. And I don't really know what will happen in the future. Some will say that ancillary service markets and flexibility markets are will be saturated. But every time we expect or see markets that saturate, we see new markets pop up. Where we saw from 23 to 24, we saw a lower price in FCRD markets. Then we saw other markets, for example, AFR in 2024 becoming, going from symmetrical to asymmetrical. Now we see further changes also in MFRR. So we, even though that some of the markets are saturated, then we on and on again see other markets either changes or new markets pops up, which creates new revenue streams and new revenue potentials. Therefore, it's very important to have an optimizer that are able to adapt fast to new market changes, both on energy markets, but also on ancillary service markets.
Yeah, we've seen that in a few places. So in Texas, for example, or actually in Great Britain is a great example when there's been a couple of times where new services have come out. And you can see some of the optimizers already on day one at the first gate closure, if you like, they're bidding into those markets. And it makes such a big difference. And it's plain for everybody to see. The companies who can really move fast and get ahead of these changes, it looks extremely good for them and also for their customers. So now let me ask you, what is your contrarian view then, Rasmus? What do you believe that not a lot of other people believe?
At least from what we hear in the market, who are the best optimizer? We do not believe that it will be one optimizer that takes it all. Every optimizer, as I believe, have their own strengths and uniqueness. And I believe that base owners need a vertically integrated optimizer and BRP in order to be able to capture the greatest value of their assets, no matter if it's standalone, co-located, or CNI based behind the meter. Furthermore, optimization of assets is becoming more and more complicated. So you need to have an optimizer that are able to both capture multi-market revenues. There we have been able to be active in several markets in the same hour, still be compliant. But you also need to, these, as I told before, have these live state of charts optimizations of the assets. This is some of the parts I think is crucial. Because the more, if you both have market optimizers and market access, and then you have additional API systems in the loop, all of these needs to get some part of the revenue. So in order to get the highest revenue for the asset owner, you need to have as few optimizers, market actors in the loop as possible.
So is your contrarian view that the optimization space is not going to be winner takes all?
Exactly. I believe that there will be space for several both optimizers, but also actors that provide market access. But what I think is important, that is that even though sometimes we are challenged by it, but that base owners are competing optimizers up against each other. This is also what makes us sharp as optimizer, yeah, and makes us more competitive. So I think it's very good that assets owners that have a larger portfolio, they get the optimizers to compete against each other. We also think it's a good competition, and it keeps us on the edge of both development and innovation, on keeping our optimizer and trading algorithms at the edge.
Okay. All right. Well, Rasmus, we've come to the end. I want to say a massive thank you for joining us on the podcast. If you're listening to this and you want to find out more about hybrid green tech or the work that Rasmus and the team are doing, then we will put links in the show notes so you can go and do that. And Rasmus, it's always fun to chat with you, and thanks for taking the time.
Thank you for letting me be here.
All right. See you later.